Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. Now, understanding who the sons of God are and what is actually being described here is really the key to understanding the magnitude of the judgment that came upon the world.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the book of Genesis. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on Genesis chapter 6 in a message titled, The Days of Noah. Now here's Pastor Brian.
Genesis chapter 6. As we began our study in Genesis, I mentioned that the book is divided between four great events and the lives of four great men. The events are creation, the fall, the flood, and the dispersion at Babel. We come now to the flood. The flood is the greatest judgment that's ever fallen upon the earth, only to be exceeded by the great tribulation. And so let's pick up reading Genesis chapter 6. Now it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterward when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing, and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. This is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. And Noah begot three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Now, if we follow the genealogical record that's given to us in the fifth chapter, approximately 1,675 years have transpired from the beginning of creation. And so sin has so pervaded the human family that God now comes to this point of having to destroy the entire population with the exception of Noah and his family. Here in the verses that we read, God gives us the conditions that led to that catastrophic judgment. We notice, first of all, that men began to multiply on the face of the earth. And, of course, because men are sinful, the more people there are, the greater sin becomes in a society. So men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and then daughters were born to them. So this is speaking of sort of a population explosion, and we'll talk about that a bit more later. But daughters were born to them, and then we read this interesting statement. The sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful. And they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. Now, understanding who the sons of God are and what is actually being described here is really the key to understanding the magnitude of the judgment that came upon the world. Now, there are varying opinions when it comes to understanding just what's going on here. Some commentators, actually many commentators, would say that the sons of God are a reference to the godly line of Seth that we read about in the fifth chapter. And the daughters of men would be the daughters that were born to the descendants of Cain. And so what they see here is sort of an unequally yoked situation developing. Believers marrying unbelievers. And although that's a possible interpretation, I personally don't think it is the correct interpretation. Now, the other possibility, which I believe is more probable, even though it seems almost inconceivable, is that what we have going on here is some sort of a union between fallen angelic creatures and human beings. And as we look closely at the text, I personally think that that's really the best interpretation. Now, this term, the sons of God, is found three other times in the Old Testament. And each one of those other occurrences are in the book of Job. And in each case, it refers to angels. So there's never another place in the Old Testament where this term, the sons of God, are used, where it is not a reference to angels. Another thing that I think is interesting is that the Septuagint, which was the Greek translation of the Hebrew Scriptures, along with the writings of many other of the Jewish scholars, they all interpreted this phrase, the sons of God, to be a reference to angels. So if that is indeed the case, which it does seem to be to me, then what we have here is something that's almost inconceivable. We have fallen angels, or as we would more often refer to them, demonic beings, in some way cohabiting with human women and producing offspring through some sort of a sexual union. Now, the reason many commentators reject that interpretation is because it's just so bizarre. And I admit, it is very bizarre. But at the same time, I think that's what the text is saying. And I do believe that something beyond mere human wickedness must have been occurring for the judgment to be as great as it was. Now, we don't know what the population of the earth was at that time, and there have been various attempts to estimate the population of the world. But a very, very, very conservative number would be in the millions. Some have actually put it more in the billions, even possibly about the same amount of people as we have on the earth today. I don't know that that's would be accurate, but I think to say in the millions would be fair. So you have millions of people that are going to perish. They're going to come under this judgment, and only one man and his family, and probably his family primarily for the purpose of procreation to repopulate the earth, but there's really one man that's singled out as being the righteous man in his generation. So something horrific, something almost inconceivable seems to be what is being described here. Now, in the New Testament, we have certain statements that, again, seem to infer that that is indeed what took place. Peter, in his second epistle, chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, he said, "For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to Tartarus and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah." Notice the connection there. He makes a connection between the two things. God did not spare the angels who sinned, but he cast them down, and he did not spare the ancient world, but he saved Noah. Jude, in his little epistle in the sixth verse, he said this. He said, "The angels who kept not their proper domain, but left their own abode." Listen to that wording. They kept not their proper domain. They left their position, the estate that God had intended for them to remain in. They departed from that. They left that. They did not keep their proper domain, but left their own abode. For them he has reserved, or them he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. Now, the real dilemma is just, well, you know, how could this be possible? And those who reject this idea and go for the other idea that this is just, you know, a union, what is being described here is a union between the godly and the ungodly descendants of Adam. One of the things that they will often use to reject this other interpretation is they will say, well, you know, that's not a possibility because they will say angels are sexless. And they will then quote Jesus, who said that in the age to come, we would neither marry nor are given in marriage, but we would be like the angels. Now, Jesus, if you read what he said there, he didn't say that the angels are sexless. He just simply said they don't marry. And so all of the arguments in support of the other view, I think they're weak arguments. Again, I grant that it's a bizarre idea, and for that reason alone, we ought to be careful in our interpretation. But the most important thing is to, you know, let the text say what it says. Now, so the question that would arise in our minds naturally would be, well, you know, how could this kind of a thing even be a possibility? How could fallen angels or demonic spirits, how could they cohabitate and procreate with human women? Well, of course, one possibility would be that these demonic beings just thoroughly and completely possessed certain human men. But it doesn't imply that in the text, although that might have been practically the way this occurred. There's a lot of things that we just don't know. There's a lot about that whole world that is still very much a mystery to us. But one commentator said something that I thought would be worth quoting. He said, "The craving of demons for a body, evident in the Gospels, offers at least some parallel to this hunger for sexual experience." So, you know, as you read through the Gospels, of course, you find that there are numerous occasions where Jesus and the apostles, as you go further into the book of Acts, they're dealing with people who are demon-possessed, literally. And so he says that there is some sort of a parallel there. Now, in verse 4, we read, "There were giants on the earth in those days, And also afterward, when the sons of God came into, and that is a reference for a sexual union, came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them, those children were mighty men who were of old, men of renown. Now, the word giant here is the word Nephilim. And I would imagine that many of you have heard that word. The word Nephilim, interestingly, literally means a fallen one. So that's the actual meaning of the word. As a matter of fact, the same root is used in Isaiah to describe Lucifer having fallen from heaven. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? It's the same root word. So the Greek Septuagint and the Latin text, they translated Nephilim, meaning fallen ones, they translated it with the word that would translate into English as giant. But it's not necessarily referring to a giant as we would think of it. The literal meaning of the word, as I said, is a fallen one. Now, notice what Moses tells us here, that the children that were born through this union between the sons of God and the daughter of men, that these children were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. Could it be that the mythological heroes that even we today have heard about, could it be that that would be sort of an embellishment or a distortion of something that actually occurred in the pre-flood world? It seems like that's what's being alluded to here. So it's this strange situation that the sons of God, and notice this too, they saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful. And the inference there is a desire, there is a lust for these women. There's another reason why I think this is indeed the interpretation. Look back in verse 3. Then the Lord said, "My spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh." You see, it seems like what's happening here is through this union with spiritual beings somehow, man is trying to, in a sense, sort of break out of that realm of the flesh. And perhaps it was still lodged in the mind of man, the lie that Satan had told to Eve in the very beginning, that if she partook of that fruit, she would not die, but rather she would be like God. And again, a commentator said this, and I thought it was interesting. He said, "It seems that God is concerned at this point, not with depravity, which verse 5 will introduce, but with presumption." This was a theme of chapter 3, verse 5. You shall be as gods. And again, in chapter 3, verse 22, the prohibition of man eating the tree of life, lest he live forever. He goes on and says, it recurs in 11:4 with the idea of building a tower reaching unto heaven. And the present episode could well belong to the series as an attempt, now listen, this is the key. The series as an attempt, this time on angelic initiative, to bring supernatural power or even immortality illicitly to the earth. So it's a very interesting insight, I thought, that this commentator had, that the demons are initiating this program to give human beings supernatural power and perhaps to help them to, apart from God, in some way attain to immortality. It's an interesting idea. And I think that today there are things going on in our world that surprisingly are similar kinds of things that I think in a process of time will ultimately be shown to definitely have demonic origins. So, this is the situation. Fallen angels are cohabitating with human women, and their offspring are these men of renown, these half-human, half-divine types of beings, so to speak. And so that's the first thing that we see that's going on, and undoubtedly that is the most significant factor, I believe, in the judgment that comes. But you would also have to say, understanding that another thing that was occurring in the context of that was a deep, deep sexual perversion, a demonically influenced sexual activity. So these are the kinds of things that were happening on the earth in those days. As we go on and again just look back at the text there, another thing we note is that lawlessness and wickedness was the rule of society. It wasn't the exception. It was the rule. Lawlessness, wickedness dominated the society. It dominated the lives of virtually everyone on the planet at that time. And on two occasions, notice we are told that the earth, because of corrupted man, is filled with violence. So this is the picture. The picture is a world that's given over to the occult, a world that's given over to humans and demons trafficking together, a world that's given over to sexual perversion, a world that is utterly and totally lawless, and a world that is filled with violence. That's the world at the time that God pronounces this judgment upon it. And so in verse 14, the Lord says to Moses, "Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and outside with pitch. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, its width 50 cubits, and its height 30 cubits. You shall make a window for the ark, and you shall finish it to a cubit from above, and set the door of the ark in its side. You shall make it with lower, second, and third decks. And behold, I myself am bringing floodwaters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall go into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And every living thing of all flesh you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, of animals after their kind, and of every creeping thing of the earth after its kind, two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. And you shall take for yourself of all food that is eaten, and you shall gather it to yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them. Thus Noah did according to all that God commanded him, so he did." Now, in our next study, we're going to look at the flood itself and all of the details of the ark.
For the month of February, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled The Gospel by Ray Ortland. Are you experiencing the glory of Christ made visible through the beauty of gospel-infused relationships in the church? Well, in his book, The Gospel, Ray Ortland shares a biblical examination of what he calls a gospel culture, a culture that both fosters Christian relationships and is attractive and welcoming to those outside the faith. To develop a biblical understanding of gospel culture, we encourage you to call us right now. at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can find more resources or sign up for Pastor Brian's free weekly email devotional. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Genesis. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.